Good morning. When I saw the services list coming up and saw the question mark service needed a worship leader, I quickly spoke up and said, I'll take that one. And I did this for several reasons. I enjoy hearing all the questions that are presented to Reverend Christina. They come from people of all ages, and every year there is always a good variety of subjects the questions ask about. And it's fun to watch Reverend Christina come up with the answers on the spot with little time to prepare. This takes skill to come up with answers that are accurate and appropriate for the situation. People who are good at this make it look easy. Another reason that I enjoy this service is because a big reason I belong to the fellowship is I always ask questions, even at a young age. I would ask my parents all kinds of questions like, why did you have me 8 years after my brother? Why did you put me in a private school when my sisters and my brother all went to public schools and turned out very successful? And hey, Mom, they told me the planet was only this many years old at school, but the encyclopedia says it's this old. Who's right? Even as a youngster, I enjoyed watching my parents try to come up with answers to questions that made them uncomfortable. I knew I was in a place that didn't fit with my vision of where I belonged. The power of questions is underestimated. A story I recently read in the Washington Post on May 6th was about a hijacker armed with a rifle boarded a school bus in Columbia, South Carolina, and it was carrying 18 children, and he demanded the driver go to the next town 15 minutes away. Then the kids started peppering the man with questions, one after another. Were you a soldier? Why are you doing this? Are you going to hurt us? What about our driver? Sensing more questions coming, the man told the driver to stop and got off the bus. The driver could sense he had had enough of the questions. Fortunately, no one was hurt, and the man was apprehended shortly after leaving the bus. It seems that, at least in this case, tragedy was averted because of the natural curiosity of kindergartners. Our fourth guiding principle is a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. It was because of my search for truth and meaning that I found the fellowship, who welcomed me, and I was able to discover what I am here. I discovered that I am an agnostic, which is someone who does not know whether or not God exists. A weak agnostic does not know if there is a God, but may feel that they are still weighing evidence or will receive more evidence. A strong agnostic believes it's ultimately unknowable whether or not God exists. I'm somewhere in between, and that's okay. I feel welcome here in the fellowship and free to ask questions. The church I grew up in, questions were shunned and considered inappropriate. We were expected to take their word as gospel. That never sat well with me, so I never felt comfortable and kept asking questions. Soon, you will all have a chance to ask a question of your own. Our sermon today is a question box, but because we are on Zoom, we ask that you submit your questions via the chat box. You can send them as a private message directly to Reverend Christina or make them visible to everyone, but Steve will now play for a minute or two to allow those questions to come in. Thank you for your presence here today and for your questions.
Okay, these are excellent questions. And there's so many. And as always, I'm going to do my best to answer as many as I possibly can while giving each answer as much time as they need. And if I don't get to them all, then perhaps we'll get to them in another sermon. Sometimes these make wonderful sermons for scroll articles. So keep your eyes out for those things as well. Okay, let's see. Okay. Nate asked the question, what is my favorite comic strip? And I would start with that one because that's a fun one. We'll start fun. And I'm going to say my favorite comic strip is probably Peanuts. I just really love Snoopy. And although, you know, I didn't like it when they made it into movies because I feel like all the friends are kind of mean to Charlie Brown. But in the comic strip, I don't feel like it's quite that way. So that's my answer for that one. This one is often asked at Question Box Services, and it's a great one. And it's one that we can never answer enough, is the question about what is my elevator speech, which is the idea of how do you explain Unitarian Universalism in a short amount of time? And that happens to all of us, especially when we're talking to friends or family or new people at parties or something like that, which hopefully we'll be able to do more often coming up soon. And people say, you know, so where do you go to church, or what, you know, what religion are you? And you say, I'm a Unitarian Universalist. And usually people don't know what that means. And so how do we explain it briefly? And I like to start, first of all, by taking some assessment of who I'm talking to. So if I know for sure that this person I'm talking to is a Christian, then, you know, I want to try to find some way in without putting them off. So I usually start with our history, and I say something like, Unitarianism and Universalism used to be two Christian denominations, and when they came together in the 60s, it created something new. So some folks in our congregations are Christian, but you don't have to be Christian to be a part of our community. So that's my little in. So that history of Unitarianism, the belief that God is one and not three, and Universalism, the idea that God is love and that no one would go to hell. So maybe I would include that in my elevator speech. And then I usually say something like, we come together and agree to challenge each other and support each other on our different faith journeys. So we might all have different beliefs as we sit next to each other in our community, but we all agree on how we're going to live and try to make the world a better place through our, what we call our seven principles. So it might sound something like, Unitarianism and Universalism used to be two Christian denominations. Unitarianism believed that God is one, not three parts, and Universalism believed that God is love. And when they got together in the 60s, they created something new. So people in our congregations can be Christian, but don't have to be. We have lots of different beliefs among ourselves. And rather than focusing on what it is that we believe, we agree to come together to challenge and support each other so that we can all be on our own faith journeys together and help each other make the world a better place and live our lives in ways that are good and helpful for us. So that might be how I would answer that question. Ask me again next year, it'll probably be slightly different. But sometimes people like to emphasize our focus on justice. Sometimes people like to focus on our welcome of people of all genders and sexualities. Depending on who you're talking to, you might want to tweak your answer. So I try to do that as well. All right, let's see. We've been through a lot of transitions in recent years, which can feel tiring and scary. How can we support each other through this? And I'm assuming that this question means we at the fellowship have been through a lot of transitions. And I'm gonna draw on a previous congregation I served, which also went through a lot of transitions and was preparing for even more big transitions. And someone asked me this question at the question box there as well. And I just really encouraged the congregation, and I encourage us as well, to recognize that change is life. that all the time things are changing. Even if things sort of feel stable, there's always something changing, whether it's the weather outside, or we're aging and growing, or new people are coming into our community, or people are leaving. We're always shifting and changing. And I think if we're all going to hold on and wait until it stops changing, we're going to hold on and wait for a really, really long time. So I think it behooves us to lean into that change so that we can be, so that it doesn't have to feel so off balance and scary. It can feel just like a natural, healthy part of life and growth. And I would venture to say that change is not going to stop. Reverend Leah and her family are leaving. Reverend Leah's ministry is going to end. Allie is going to come back to us. Allie will eventually leave within a year. We don't know who will come next. And I think, hopefully I get to stay for a long, long time, but we don't know how long that next person will stay. And things are just going to keep changing. So as long as we can just continue to recognize that we, as the fellowship, are not necessarily our leaders. We are the people, and we are the vision and the values that make up this place, because even the people come and go. That is the core. And as long as we can hold on to that core, that is what can keep us stable. One of the parts of this question was, how can we support each other through this transition? And I think, I don't know a particular answer to how, but I think it's necessary that we do support each other, and recognize that we need to continue to lean into the fellowship, and support each other regardless of transitions that are happening as part of the fellowship life. So I hope that we'll continue to do that. There were several questions about our congregation in particular. How healthy is our congregation now? Do you see our fellowship continuing to grow? What is one hope you have for the fellowship in the coming year? So this is a tricky time to ask these questions, because we're hopefully at the end of the many, many, many months of this pandemic. Today, I spent the morning kind of cleaning out my office and rearranging it in preparation for moving my desk back. My desk has been in my bedroom for over a year at my home, and I'm ready to move it back to the building. And I was realizing that just so much has happened in the last 15 months. I'm sitting in our legacy room right now, which is in our fellowship building. And the last time I had a meeting in here, we were getting ready to shut down our building. So it's hard to know exactly where our fellowship stands right now. I have faith and some evidence to believe that we're in a good place, that a solid core of people have been continuing to come online throughout the whole pandemic, that a whole chunk of people are wanting to be a part of our online programs, but just can't make the time, or they have young children and that's hard. And anytime we reach out to them, they say, oh, we just miss it so much and we can't wait till we're back in person. So we believe that there's a lot of people who are just sort of waiting to return. And then we've also reached out to some new folks. There's a handful of people on this call right now who have never seen the inside of our building, and we can't wait to continue to welcome you into our space and into this community, even as you've become a part of it while we've been online. So we will continue to have our offerings both online and in person when we're able to regather in person. And so that will be a change from the before times. But again, one of those changes, that life is change, and we're just going to keep it going so that we can continue to welcome those people who are far away, people who can't make it into the building, who are sick or have limited mobility, and then also regather in person so that we can have that time face-to-face for those of us who want that. So we're hoping to plan some events this summer that can allow people to come and visit and be in person outdoors and maybe a little bit indoors as well. But I just want to reiterate that we will likely not be having in-person Sunday services until the fall. And I recognize that some congregations in our community are reopening this summer. Unfortunately, those congregations have a lot more staff than we do. And your staff really, really needs this summer to recuperate, plan, and focus on doing reopening well. And so I just ask your patience and grace while we're getting everything ready and also taking some much needed time off during this summer. Let's see, one hope I have for this coming year for the fellowship is that we will be able to capitalize on regathering in person and creating this sort of hybrid model for our worship and programs to allow us to really decide or re-engage with who we are as a people. So that's one of my big hopes for the coming year. And our governing board will be leading us through a visioning and mission process. The last time we did that was 5 years ago, which was right before I arrived as your senior minister. And it's time. It's time in our cycle to do that. And it's also just time in our world to do that. So we're really excited to be able to do that. And then we're also, I'm just hoping that that's a perfect time for us to do it, to come back together, to remember why we love our community and be able to articulate it. Let's see. Will our services be different? I just mentioned a little bit about how they'll be different, that they'll be both online and in person. And yes, my assumption is that they will be different than what they were in the past, partly to allow for a truly inclusive experience for those who are at home and those who are in the building. We don't want to prioritize overly prioritize one group over the other. We don't want to say, we're going to stick a video camera in the back and make it, if you come online, that you're just sort of a fly on the wall. We want you to be a part of the community as well. Likewise, we don't want the people in the room to feel like they're just watching something they could have watched at home. So we're trying to figure out how to do that well. So, sorry, I'm occasionally seeing things pop up on the chat box, but we're trying to figure out how to do that well. So things will probably look different than they did in the before times, but there will also be a lot of things that feel the same. There was a question about God. Do I believe that God is the Judeo-Christian idea of God as a personal higher power, or do I see it as a symbol of positive things? Like my elevator speech, I would say that changes from day to day. I don't know that I personally ever view God in the traditional view from Jewish and Christian scriptures. Although the view in Jewish and Christian scriptures of God is wildly different from book to book. There's lots of different understandings of God, even within the Bible. But I would personally say, if I use the word God, I often try to explain what I mean, but often I'm talking about that power, which is so much greater than us that we can't explain it. Some people call it the universe or the cosmos. Some people call it energy. I believe that God exists in the energy and relationships between us. And so I use the word God often symbolically. But I also think it's really a powerful word and one that we should be able to use and claim. And so But often people get hung up on the idea that the word God could only mean one possible thing, and it's a man with a white beard in the clouds. And I want us to be able to be flexible with that word. So usually when I use the word God, and I don't that often, but when I do, I try to explain what I mean. And often I'm using it historically to talk about when the Unitarians believed this about God, or the Universalists believed this about God, and how we can sort of take that understanding today. So I hope that helps. There were two questions about racial justice. One, how we might pursue racial justice today. And the other one was a question about how we might let the wider Fox Cities community know about why the Ongiri family is leaving and the ways that they experienced racism and homophobia here in our community, and that that's a piece of their wanting to leave, which Leah stated really beautifully in the letter that she sent out to the congregation, if you didn't see that. It's also, I think, on our website under Associate Minister Transition. So with that question, I don't have a great answer. And if I were to make one up, it wouldn't be honest. But I would say I think it does make sense to try to let people know. I know who asked this question, and they suggested to me that maybe it would be safer to wait until the Ongiris left, so that it didn't blow back on them in any way. And I think that that may make sense. We don't need to make a big deal about it until they're safely in Portland. I think it's something that either we can just do organically and by word of mouth, sharing questions with each other, sharing comments with our friends, or letting our neighbors know, you know, the ways in which this has impacted our fellowship community personally. I also think that it might make sense at some point to reach out to some of our community leaders to get their advice about how we could make this personal story known more explicitly, and maybe, you know, maybe through our city hall, maybe through the newspaper. I don't exactly know. But I think it's a great idea, a good thought, that it's one thing to say like racism is real, but to say it's impacted personally our community is more powerful. And our governing board talked a month or two ago about, you know, if we were to ever recruit another minister or staff person who was a person of color, or partnered with a person of color, would we need to offer reparations of some kind? Not to tell that person that they should not come to this community, but to say, if you do come, we would pay for you to have ongoing therapy to help make that a more easier transition, or something like that. And I think that's a really wise way to think about this question. So not a gatekeeping mechanism, but actually an opening and inclusivity mechanism that could be supportive. Man, we're out of time. There's so many good questions. I would love to talk about the question about how to help kids who are afraid of death. My short answer is to just normalize it. Depends on the kid's age, but just to talk about it as a normal, healthy part of life, that if people didn't die, we wouldn't have room on the planet for babies. But there's different kinds of death. There's natural death from age, and then there's also more traumatic death from accidents or illness. And those require different answers. So I don't have time for that now, but if you want to ask me, send me an email and ask me that question. I'd love to talk to you about that. That's something I used to talk to medical chaplains about. I used to give a lecture on how to talk to children about death. So, and yeah, there's just so much here. But thank you. Thank you for your questions. And I'll go back and try to find them and see if I can answer them in scroll articles or anything else. If you personally had a question that you just actually want an answer to, not just in the context of this service, feel free to email me and I'll see if I can do my best to answer it. But of course, I'm not the only one with answers, and other folks in our chat box and in our community have been answering them as well. So thank you so much.